Welcome back to another Coolidge Connection. My name is Joanna McCool, and in this series, I explore Calvin Coolidge's legacy by interviewing people connected to him and his family. During this episode, I speak with John Sales, Calvin Coolidge's great-grandson, and also the brother to Jennifer Coolidge Harville, who was kind enough to be interviewed for our first episode. Although Mr. Sales has never lived in Plymouth Notch, he still feels a deep connection to it in his childhood, which he recalls in our discussion. From memories of his grandparents, John and Florence, to his thoughts on how the presidency affected John Coolidge, Mr. Sales offers a window into the life of a presidential family. Hear his stories about summertime in Vermont, his grandfather's dry sense of humor, and much more in this latest episode. To start off, can you tell me just a little bit about yourself and what your connection is to Calvin Coolidge?
Yeah, I'm John Sales, and I am President Coolidge's great-grandson, the youngest great-grandchild of President Coolidge, and I live in Portland, Maine. I've got two kids of my own, married, and yeah.
And just so our audience is aware, you would be the younger brother to Jenny Harville, correct?
Younger brother to Jenny Sales Harville. Yes, indeed. She's my big sister by 4 years.
So can you talk a little bit more about your life and how it was impacted by your connection to Calvin Coolidge?
Sure. So Jenny and I grew up in Georgia. Our dad was a college reference librarian and worked at Georgia College down in Georgia. Our mom, Lydia, was a homemaker, and then she actually went to work at the public library at some point when Jenny and I were in school. So on sort of a day-to-day basis, there wasn't a whole lot of Coolidge-y stuff, but every summer we would go up to Plymouth Notch for a few weeks. You know, we'd make the long trek from Georgia, so we might stay for 3 or 4 weeks up there, visiting my grandparents and settling in and really just kind of becoming part of that place for a little while. It was like two different worlds. I mean, obviously, geographically, you know, Georgia and Vermont are pretty dissimilar from each other, but also, of course, everything in Plymouth Notch, you know, revolves around Calvin Coolidge. It was his birthplace, his boyhood home. The historic site there has been, of course, you know, carefully preserved. You know, I didn't think too much about the Calvin Coolidge heritage until the summertime when we were actually there. And there are all these sort of tourists milling about and tour buses coming through and people asking questions. And so my sister and I would go uptown, as we called it. And, you know, in kind of a typical Coolidge way, like my grandfather would go uptown and he would get the mail and he would check in at the cheese factory. And I'm sure the vast majority of the people up there had no idea who he was because he was just this sort of little old man going about his business, you know, getting his newspaper. And so with my sister and I, it was kind of the same thing. We would go uptown and we would just hang around up there and we would help out some of the folks who were working in some of the buildings. We would just sort of be standing out, talking to them. Sometimes we would help them punch tickets, because back in the day, there were actual tickets that were punched with a hole puncher. And we would just sort of be there helping out, and we didn't advertise who we were or bring any attention to it. It was just something to do while we were up there. So the summers were pretty magical. It was really wonderful to be there and to be part of that. Most of the time, didn't think too much about being a Coolidge, but when I was up there, it was hard not to be aware of it.
Did you enjoy those summers up there, being with your grandparents and part of the Coolidge world?
Yeah, very much so. It was really fun to be up there. I always felt a really deep connection to that place. You know, all through my childhood, loved visiting. I think part of that was just getting out of the Deep South, where I always felt a little bit out of place, I think, and getting up to, you know, the hills of Vermont, it was much cooler and it was just beautiful. And I liked the people, the sort of dry wit and the sort of a little bit less sort of syrupy interactions than you have down south. No offense to the south. So I loved being up there and loved just being around my grandparents, being in the house, spending time with them, and also participating in some of the Coolidge activities. Like, we were often up there for the 4th of July. And I think my sister may have talked to you about this. That was a day-long kind of thing, which often started with us going over to the cemetery and trimming around the graves and kind of straightening up the cemetery a little bit in preparation for the parade and for, you know, the little ceremony that they have right there at the cemetery in Plymouth every 4th of July, Calvin Coolidge's birthday, of course. So events like that, I looked forward to. It was fun being up there. It was really peaceful and really beautiful.
As you've grown older, have you found that your Coolidge connection has impacted your adult life in any way?
That's a good question. I have just sort of at this point, you know, sort of not been super involved with things. I have a young family. I feel like my life is pretty full and pretty intense in the ways that it always seems to be when you've got young kids and you're figuring out that. I definitely am proud of it. You know, I always carry it with me. I still love going back to Plymouth and spending time with my sister, especially over there. She lives close by, so we tend to meet up there if I ever come over to that neck of the woods. And I'm so impressed by how over the years, both the site and the interest in Coolidge sort of in tandem with each other have improved and grown. New scholarship has happened and books have been published, and the Coolidge Foundation itself seems to be in really good shape as far as like attracting younger people. I think the scholarship program has been great, and the debates and all of that stuff to kind of introduce this figure whose, you know, presidency coming up on 100 years ago, pretty far back, but introducing him to a new generation of people and keeping that interest going. Because my grandparents were concerned that it would sort of all die off when they did, which is a little silly when I think about it now, but that was really a concern of theirs, like that their sort of direct interest in and involvement with the foundation and with all things Coolidge. I think they were concerned about that just fading away as time went on, but I've actually seen it not fade away, but increase and become even more interesting and even more complex with different things going on. So
that's awesome.
It's good. It's gratifying.
My next question is, have you had any experiences or special opportunities in your life that are directly related to being a presidential descendant, specifically being related to Coolidge?
There are certainly opportunities. Again, I feel like I'm lagging behind Jenny and my cousin Chris as far as my sort of direct involvement with things. My sister keeps trying to get me to go to the Cherry Blossom Festival in Marshfield, Missouri, which she's just a big fan of that. And that's this thing in Marshfield, Missouri that has grown to involve presidential descendants, as well as sort of different celebrities, sort of old folks from old TV shows and like old country singers. So yeah, there are opportunities. There are things out there. I mean, I don't feel like I've ever benefited personally from being a presidential descendant. I don't get special treatment at restaurants or anything like that. But I realize how unique it is. I mean, it's a very small group of people who can say that they, you know, have a direct connection to that heritage. I recognize how unique it is. And, you know, I'm trying to pass that interest on to my kids. My daughter is definitely very interested in all things Coolidge and has really been pushing me to take her to Marshfield, Missouri. So we'll see if that happens in 2021. I hope so.
You never know. Can you describe your grandparents a little bit more? What were they like?
Yeah, absolutely. So John and Florence, who my sister called Grandpa, we called John Grandpa. We called my grandmother Bobby. I don't remember how that got started. I think that's probably a Jenny question or a cousin Chris question. I just followed along, you know, as the youngest does. But they were great. My grandfather was very quiet. As a kid, I admit I was a little intimidated by him just because he was, you know, he was quiet. He had these big bushy eyebrows. He could be a little stern, but he could also be very funny and very tender. It was always funny to kind of get him, you know, tell a joke and hear him sort of do his sort of low, you know, his chuckle. And we would do these little routines with each other, which were kind of funny. We would give and receive what he called pops on the snoot, which was like a little sort of gentle punch on the nose, which always cracked him up, especially when we were really little. And he was a quiet guy. I wish I'd asked him more questions, because if you did draw him out, he would start talking. But sometimes it could be challenging sort of knowing, you know, what questions to ask him and how to get him going on things. He didn't talk too much about being the son of the president. He really didn't talk about it much. I think he was proud of it. And I think it was also at times in his life probably pretty challenging for him. My grandmother, Bobby, was much more outgoing, much more talkative, much more vivacious. She was really funny. I sort of followed her around the house. You know, she would be puttering around and doing some cleaning, and she would be in the kitchen. And she also really enjoyed working in her garden outside. And I remember my sister and I sort of trying to help out with that. She would be pulling weeds and putting them in a big basket. We would take the basket and go dump it over the stone wall. And that was kind of our little way of helping out. So she was much more kind of lively than my grandfather. And it was a lot of fun being there. The whole vibe of the house, they had the big house in Plymouth up on the hill. And it was just a very inviting environment. It was just very mellow and very, I don't know, very peaceful. It was a wonderful place to spend time.
Do you have any special stories or memories about your grandparents?
Yeah, I mean, I remember especially my grandfather. This isn't a specific story, but kind of just a general thing. He loved to sing. And again, being such a quiet guy, it was sort of kind of exciting to see him really cut loose and sing, which would happen in church. I don't know so much about cutting loose, but you know, he'd get his sort of low baritone going on the hymns in church. And I remember also, particularly as he got older, it was funny. Like if there was an event that we were attending, maybe it was something over at the Coolidge Foundation. I think one time he had a birthday party over there. If there was somebody playing the piano and he heard that, he would go zipping right over to the piano and stand next to it and start talking with whoever was playing the piano. And before you knew it, he would be sort of suddenly singing, you know, old standards and things like that. So I always got a kick out of that. It was like seeing a completely different side of him, which wasn't to say he was out there like making a big show of it. But you could tell it just really, it was something that he really loved and enjoyed. And it was nice to see those occasions when he was able to do that. And my grandmother, I just have memories of her, like, again, just being very engaging and talking with people. If we went uptown to go to church on Sundays, or again, at the 4th of July, just, you know, she was just a very sweet, talkative, you know, just, it was very funny. The contrast between the two of them at times, because, my grandfather was so quiet, but she also really, as I said, enjoyed working in her garden. And I especially remember her putting together, again, on Sunday mornings, putting flower arrangements together for the church, something that she really enjoyed doing. She'd be working on this in the kitchen. She'd have the big vase, and she'd have newspaper all over the kitchen counter. She'd be trimming the stems and making it just so and putting it all together. And then I guess my grandfather must have hopped in the car and driven them up to the church. I don't really remember how they got there, but that must have been what happened. So that was something that she enjoyed spending time doing. And we kids would sort of try to help her out, but that was really kind of her gig.
And is that the same church at the historic site?
Yes. Yeah, it's the same church. And through my childhood, I think at least in the summertime, there were services every Sunday, I think. And then I think it was like once a month. I mean, it sort of gradually kind of diminished. But we would go, you know, I remember throughout these summers that we spent up there going to church. And, you know, I don't think there was really a set congregation per se. I remember there being sort of a series of guest ministers that would come through in the summertime. So yeah, we would do that. And it was lovely. I mean, it's a lovely little country church. And we had the Coolidge pew, which was sort of marked off. There's a little plaque on one of the arms of the pew. And so that's where we would always sit. We'd always sort of get in there and slide down. My grandmother's flowers would be up on the altar there. And there's an old pump organ. I mean, it was great. It was a very different experience than going to church down south.
Florence's flowers were probably a wonderful addition.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful to see up at the site in Plymouth, the garden, I can't think of the name of it, which is, that's bad. That's bad on my part. But the garden just next to the church, which has been, you know, just in the last, I think, 10 or 15 years kind of replanted. I think it existed, you know, long ago. I think of my grandmother when I see that. She didn't have a direct involvement with that, but again, is just a fan of gardening and flowers. And it's nice to see that there. Right next to the church.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have any funny or touching stories about your grandparents?
Funny or touching stories? My grandfather and I, we had these little, this might not be funny to anyone except me, but I'll tell you, I'll put this in the archives. We would do this little routine in the morning. I would usually be up before him. And I would have some breakfast downstairs. And at some point, I would go back upstairs. And he was often, he would use this bathroom at the top of the stairs. And he'd be in there shaving, usually with the door open. And I'd start coming up the stairs. And he would say, his very, very gruff, low voice, John Coolidge. He would say, "Who dat?" And I'd say, "It's me." And he'd say, "Who's me?" I'd say, "John." He'd say, "John who?" I'd say, "John Sayles." And he'd say, "Who's John Sayles?" I'd say, "Your grandson." And they'd start singing a John Philip Sousa march, like, "Na, da, 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 da." And it was just this thing that we did almost every morning when I was there, from when I was little all the way up to when I was like 20. And it was very funny. It was just this little bit we had. And I'm just trying to think of other, you know, funny stories. I think Jenny told you the story about being at a restaurant and the service was really slow. And he made some comment right towards the end, like, "Well, we better get out of here before the sun comes up," or something like that. He hadn't really said a word for like hours before that, but it was just like, boom, perfect timing. So there's that story. He would watch baseball and... He was a big baseball fan, big sports fan. And so he would be sitting watching sports, and he was normally quiet, very sort of a proper fellow, but he'd be cursing under his breath, not loudly, not screaming at the television or anything, like the Red Sox would blow it again, as they did for so many years. And he'd just be like, I just hear him like, "Damn fools. How'd you not drop that? Why'd you drop that ball?" It's very funny. So not too many like really memorable stories, just little moments like that, little things sort of peek under the quiet exterior. And again, if you sometimes got him going, he would start talking about things. And I really wish I had asked him more questions when I had the chance. He told me some story about when he was in college. I can't remember the details of it. But it was some story, some classic, you know, college hijinks of stealing the crank off of the front of somebody's car. I think there was drinking involved, but I don't remember much more than that. So lost to history.
Well, I know you've said he's very quiet and you would have to draw him out.
Yeah.
But do you recall him ever talking about the presidency or his time in the White House?
Not so much. I mean, he would talk about those things. I know that there are some interviews that he did, both in print and that were filmed, where he talked about that a bit. I don't remember him talking about that to me really much at all. I did know that he was in college for a good chunk of his father's presidency. His roommate, he was at Amherst College in Massachusetts. His roommate was a Secret Service agent whose name I can't recall. But he didn't talk too much about it. I think it was, you know, a challenging time for him. He was a young man. I think he felt like he had to really sort of tread softly and be an example to America as the son of the president. It probably didn't help that, you know, his younger brother, of course, passed away, which, I would have loved to have asked some questions about Calvin Jr. and what kind of relationship they had. And if my grandfather had stories about his brother, I'm sure he did. But I think that was, I'm sure, hard, you know, losing your only brother and being sort of the only child. I had the sense that he wasn't super close to his father. That's kind of just supposition on my part. I think it was a fairly, they were both sort of quiet men, and he was close to his mother. His mother was much more vivacious. Grace Coolidge was much more open, and they had a good relationship. And of course, she lived long enough to know my mother, Lydia, and her older sister, Cynthia. And my mother loved her grandmother and had lots of fond memories of going to visit her when she was a child and into her teenage years, and going shopping and things like that. And just remembered her as a very warm and light, lots of laughter, lots of good times with her grandmother. So,
on that note, did Lydia ever talk about Grace or share any stories about her personally?
I can't remember any specific stories about her. Again, I just remember it being clear that they were very fond of each other. And I think, you know, Grace very much loved her son, John, my grandfather, and Florence. And there was a lot of correspondence back and forth and visits. And she referred to that nuclear family, John, Florence, and Cynthia and Lydia, as her precious four. And I think got a lot of joy and satisfaction out of visits with them and time spent with them. But I don't have any specific stories that I can recall my mother telling me. Again, I wish I'd asked more questions.
That's okay. I mean, yeah. It's usually not until you're older that you realize what a treasure grandparents are.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as I think I said to you before, it almost seems unfair. I mean, obviously it's the nature of the relationship, generational thing and time passing, but you don't know your grandparents until they're old or older. And so I think particularly that generation, as they got older, there was some reticence, you know, certainly for my grandfather, not a lot of necessarily spontaneously, at least, wanting to talk about his childhood or his relationship with his parents or anything like that. So what are you going to do?
I have another question.
Sure.
About just family phrases. Mm-hmm. I think they tend to, well, my family has this phrase, hard work makes life sweet. And that's what my grandpa used to say all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what my mom says. And so I was wondering if you and your family have any of those phrases that might have been handed down over generations.
Yeah, there are a few. The phrase, here come the kids, Ma, was, and again, this must have been just told to us, because we wouldn't, in the context of how that phrase was used, we wouldn't actually have heard it. But that was apparently what my grandfather used to say to my grandmother when we were, again, sort of arriving in Plymouth and sort of driving up the hill. He would say, here come the kids, Mom. And so that's a phrase that my sister and I, you know, will use with each other. My mom always reminded us of. And I'm trying to think of other phrases. That's the main one that I can think of. I remember my grandfather, whenever we were there, he would say grace. Of course, now, you know, that the camera is rolling, I can't think of what the prayer was, but normally I know it by heart, and my sister and I sometimes will recite it together. And sometimes my grandmother would get frustrated, and she, you know, oh, shoot, that sort of thing. And just, you know, when my sister and I are together, one of us can sort of go into that kind of mode. And the other, of course, knows exactly what we're doing. But really, yeah, the here come the kids, Mom one. I mean, that's just such a sweet little expression. And they were always happy to see us. I think, you know, up in Plymouth, sometimes it could feel a little bit isolated. And so I think it was good for them when we came to visit, kind of brought a little bit of crazy energy into an otherwise pretty quiet place. So one memory I have of them, and this is I can bring this up in my mind, no problem. When we would leave, when it was time to go, time to head back down the road, go back to Georgia, my grandparents would always come and we'd be in the garage, we'd be packing up the car. They'd always be out in the garage with us. We would back up and start driving out. They'd be waving. And then they would make their way in the house in Plymouth. There's the garage, there's the house, and then between the two is a breezeway. And so as we were driving down the sort of a long, you know, kind of a long curving driveway down the hill and then up into town and away from their house, they would make their way into the garage and up the stairs and out onto the breezeway. And so, we'd be driving sort of in front of the house and they would come out onto the breezeway and they'd both start waving. And every time, just always. And I really remember that fondly and clearly. And of course, as the years went by and as they got older, we would go really slowly to give them time to like get up the stairs, get out onto the breezeway and wave. And again, just that was just a constant thing as time went on. And at some point, it was obviously all of us on our family vacation. I went to college in upstate New York, a couple of hours away from Plymouth. And so I would go over and see them sometimes just by myself. And it was the same thing. If I left, they would go up, they would do the wave. We always give a couple, you know, little toots on the horn as we're going. So that's just a nice memory of the two of them just in their breezeway, this beautiful house, the hills behind them in Plymouth, sending us off, sending us back to reality.
It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's a really special place. Really special place. You got to go there. There's a place in Plymouth called Camp Plymouth State Park that has cabins you can rent. Used to be a Boy Scout camp. Now it's a state park. It's great. It's on Echo Lake. You can go swimming. It's about 10 minutes away from Plymouth Notch, the actual historic site. So it's easy to get to that and walk around and see people and visit people.
Is there anything else that you would like to talk about?
I'm sure I'll think of, 500 things once we get off the Zoom together. But one thing I really loved doing as a kid was in Plymouth Notch, going up to the cheese factory, which at the time was owned and run, but it was owned by my grandfather. And there was a cheesemaker there. And I think the cheese factory had been originally started in the late 1800s. And I think Colonel John Coolidge, Calvin Coolidge's father, was involved in that somehow, as he was involved in many things in the town. And I think it closed at some point, and my grandfather bought it and reopened it. And so when I was a kid, it was open, it was making cheese, and he would go up there again when he would go up into town in his big station wagon with his little hat on. And he was a short man, so there would just be a steering wheel, hands, and a hat. And that was my grandfather driving his big station wagon up to town. He would go check in at the cheese factory. And sometimes we would go with him, or sometimes we would just walk up there later in the day. And if they were making the cheese, they would give us fresh cheese curds in a little cardboard container, almost like a Chinese food container. They just had those around. They would give us these fresh, warm cheese curds. And that was just like the best thing. And so that was a nice perk of being in Plymouth. And my grandfather always got a kick out of us coming back with our cheese curds and snacking on them. So he really loved that place and loved running it. And I'm glad he did. And it's changed hands a few times since, but it's still up and running and seems to be doing really well.
I hear a lot about the Plymouth Cheese Company.
Yeah, it's really good. And he would send us down in Georgia, a couple of times a year, he would send us care packages from the cheese factory. And so we'd get a wheel. I mean, when I say a wheel, I mean literally a wheel of cheddar cheese. And then, other random things that they sold that were made in the area. There was like red pepper relish, and there was watermelon pickle, and all these other sort of random things that would come in these care packages a couple of times a year. So always fun to get those. another example of just his sort of little subtle ways of checking in with us and taking care of us. So good stuff. He was a good grandpa. He was. I miss him.
I guess we've hit all the points. If you don't have anything else, the interview's done.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for your help and your time. Yeah. You've helped fill out the picture of Calvin Coolidge's legacy, family especially.
Yeah, it's very cool. And as I said, from my perspective, it seems like the foundation is in a really good, healthy place in terms of all the different programs that you guys are doing. And in terms of sort of interest in Calvin Coolidge in general and that time period in general, that part of American history, there's much more going on now in the last, I'd say, 10, 15 years than there was when I was a kid, as far as sort of scholarship and different initiatives and different programs. And so that's really encouraging to see. That's really cool. So, all right, take care. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining us here at the Coolidge Connection. This series is brought to you by the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation, which is dedicated to preserving the memory and legacy of America's 30th president through various resources such as our Debate League, Scholarship Award, and our new virtual library. To learn more about the Coolidge Foundation and get involved, please visit us online at coolidgefoundation.org. We hope you will join us in our mission to spread timeless Coolidge values across the country. A very special thank you to John Sales, who shared his time and stories with us. We look forward to sharing another Coolidge Connection interview again with you soon.